Talkback with Gary Nall, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Not video streaming because we're having a little technical glitch here. However, we look forward to sharing a lot during this hour. I'm going to give you the latest on health and healing. Then a new look at the ozone layer from our environmental section. I'll also tell you how the FDA managed to turn a $10 treatment, that's right, $10, into a $30,000 per pregnancy pharmaceutical moneymaker. How's that possible? I'll give you the inside scoop. And also, did you know that three-fourths of the Senate GOP doesn't believe in science? When did Republicans go completely off the deep end? And when it comes to understanding reality? Also, a commentary on the world super rich. The billionaires are flourishing. Inequalities deepen as the economy supposedly recovers. Recovering by which group? From Professor James Petras. So we have a lot to share with you. Time permitting, I'll also talk about an issue that is important. Four ticking time bombs that will soon ignite a major social challenge in the United States. My guest, Dr. Howard Robbins, I invited on from Friday's show to talk about foot and leg care. So any questions you have concerning anything about your legs and feet, whether it's varicosities, poor circulation, problems with your skin, hammer toes, corns, calluses, bunions, anything at all, he'll be able to answer. Later in the program, Dr. Martin Feldman will talk about macular degeneration. What are the primary causes and what can we do to keep this major cause of blindness from happening? So we have a packed hour. Let's begin. Now, we've all heard of the Mediterranean diet, and it is a very good diet. In fact, as a major group of studies have shown, it allows you to live not only a long life, but very healthy in the process. And that's been published many times. However, are you familiar with the Nordic diet? In fact, the Nordic diet now shows to be almost equal to the Mediterranean diet. The Danish Cancer Society and a Dr. Olsen and colleagues evaluated 23,000 men and 27,000 women who participated in the Diet, Cancer, and Health study, which was designed to assess the role of diet in developing cancer. And when they took a look at those that do not have cancer or diabetes or cardiovascular disease of any type upon enrollment and then followed them for a period of years, they said, here's what prevented it. Lots of cabbage, whole grain breads, oatmeal, apples, pears, root vegetables like parsnips and turnips and kohlrabi, and fish. Quote, to our knowledge, this is the first study associating a healthy Nordic food index with death. The lower death rate associated with a 1 point higher score is very similar to the lower death rate seen with the Mediterranean diet score. Where a recent meta-analysis, that means multiple studies, reported a substantial lower death rate associated with the diets. So what this means is simply this. Take a look at a good old American vegetarian diet. The type that my great aunt had back at the beginning of the century. I remember I was just a kid when I was first introduced to her. Very few of my relatives liked her because she was a very stern disciplinarian. She was wiry, smart, and completely self-sufficient. And indeed, during the Great Depression, when my mother and her sisters and my father and his brothers were needing places to stay, there were just two people that anchored all of those people, a total of nearly 20. My great uncle George, who I really, really liked as a human being. In fact, I always liked to run over there after school, which was close by, and spend time with him. He was a very gentle man, a giant man, about 6'5", 6'6", engineer. And again, he was a disciplinarian. And then on the other end, over in Little Hawking High, was my great aunt, Myrtle. Totally different in their personalities and their diet. My Uncle George smoked and didn't exercise. Aunt Myrtle, I remember when I was a teenager, she was climbing up in apple trees and shaking them, and the apples would be falling down to the ground. She had to have been in her mid-80s. And what was remarkable about her farm was that at one point she only had one person working on the farm. This was a big farm, about 200 acres. She had about 50 different types of apple trees, several types of nectarines and peaches, many types of plums, at least 15 different types of pears, mulberries and cherries, and this was just in the orchard part. She had bees all over the place, and she didn't have the standard beehive. She had one of those cone beehives that you see in England and France. And she also had she made her own cheeses. And her son, who was not a vegetarian, had a game house where he would get fish out of the Kanawha River and entrail it, disentrail it, I should say, soak it in salt, and then hang it up in this little tiny house. The house maybe was about 15 feet wide and about 8 foot high, and there were strings in the ceiling, and he would, whatever it was, rabbit, squirrel, fish, he would hang it up there after he basted it in salt, and it would dry out. He had that. She didn't need any of that stuff. And she had a press, and I watched her load this up with apples and blueberries and strawberries, all kinds of berries, and apples, and press it, and all the juice came out, and she made fresh juice, and she made fresh cider. That's the first time I'd ever tasted fresh cider, but the way she put in the other berries gave this wonderful taste, apples with raspberries. What a hoot. And she had all these root vegetables. She had a root cellar, and you went down in this place, and the first thing that hit you was this just overwhelming aroma of apples. And she would keep apples down there for as long as 11 months till the new season. She dried apples. She had kegs of dried fruit. She must have had 100 different kegs at one time. And she had this old French brick oven. She'd make those big, hearty breads. And she had the raw honey, and she would toast the bread and put the raw honey on it. It's just really neat. That's the kind of diet that kept people alive and healthy and vital for a long time, plus the physical activity. Now look at the Nordic diet. It's a colder climate, has very short growing seasons. Now if you've ever been to Sweden, one of the very first things you notice is their raspberries and strawberries are tiny, little tiny things, but just sweet as they can be. And their root vegetables are not large either. And they pride themselves in having a lot of fresh fish. And they don't have the salads that we have, but now they've introduced a lot of other heartier Japanese type of lettuce. You look at the Mediterranean diet. Very first thing you notice in the Mediterranean diet is the enormous quantities of salads, especially wild greens. And one of their favorite is sorrel. Now, if you go to the farmer's market and you buy small sorrel, you're looking at about $12 an ounce. If you get the big sorrel, you're looking at about half that. Both are very chewy, have the kind of a sweet, bitter taste. And if you put olive oil, vinegar, salt, and pepper on it, it's delicious in a salad with some lemon juice. They take their time eating. They socialize. Friends and family are very important. They live at a certain pace of life. Now, that's true in the Nordic area, and it's true in the Mediterranean area. Then you come to the United States, where we don't take our time eating. Family is really not as important as it once was. Friendships are not as tight. People have very little time for friends, at least the younger generations. And the older generations become depressed because many of their friends die. Everything is on a fast pace, and everything is with a triangulation of distraction. So you eat a meal while you're watching television, listening to radio, or reading your text messages or something off a computer. There's very little of that total relaxation. So even if we had the Mediterranean diet, or the Nordic diet, or the Formosa diet, we still wouldn't be living a longer life because we're stressed to the max. And stress is as equally important as a long life and health as is all those nutrients. Now, there is a new tea that you have not heard about, and I'll share it with you, and good science to go behind it. It is called Gynostemma, G-Y-N-O-S-T-E-M-M-A. Gynostemma helps your heart. Now, it's a member of the cucumber family, and it grows wild in southern China, where it's very popular because it has a very sweet taste, and it's considered one of the most important nutrients to take for living a longer life. It's what we call an adaptogen, one of those special plants that, like ginseng, that reduces stress upon the body, rebalances your body biochemistry, is strong in antioxidants, has a full spectrum of amino acids and minerals, it's also called the magic grass. Gynostemma is well known in folk medicine, and now there are studies that show that it actually does help with cardiovascular disease. Scientists first studied this because it tastes made it a candidate for a natural alternative to artificial sweeteners. In the process, they discovered that it had over 100 different saponins, the same chemical which is the active ingredient in ginseng, and also can help you lower your cholesterol level, and very similar to how grapes and red wine lower your cholesterol. And while some of the saponins are similar to those found in ginseng, this has nearly 400% more of them. Therefore, it's extremely powerful. Also, it helps reduce triglycerides and cholesterol, and it works in part by binding to cholesterol and preventing it from being absorbed by the body. And it's a very nice way of helping your muscles because it also provides more energy to the body. So, want to help your heart have more energy, especially if you're an athlete, and help your blood flow, get more oxygen to your muscles, then just try it. G-Y-N-O-S-T-E-M-M-A. Wanted to get you ahead of the curve on that because it's certainly going to be popular in the upcoming years. Now also, according to Paul Fass of Natural News, he did some work on what is called Brahmi. Now it doesn't matter that an ancient traditional herb has been used successfully for hundreds of years. It usually takes testing by Western scientists to bring the herb's value to our attention, even while Big Pharma tries to conceal it, and such is the case with the ancient Ayurvedic herb used as a tonic for the brain, which goes by either name Brahmi or Bacopa. Now, two recent Western human trials have shown Brahmi or Bacopa to improve memory recall and learning ability, as well as reduce anxiety and relieve tension. One trial was conducted in Australia, while three institutions collaborated in a more recent USA human study, the National College of Naturopathic Medicine, Science University, and Oregon Health. Both were double-blind studies involving humans using it for 12 weeks, and each person in the study demonstrated a marked improvement in recall and comprehension despite using small doses. What was surprising was that anxiety and depression also diminished greatly among the subjects undergoing this trial. And since it's safe, larger doses can be used by those having too many senior moments or memory lapses or brain fog. It even diminishes depression or anxiety while handling those other issues. And by the way, Ayurvedic doctors have prescribed this herb for the heart as well as the brain and the nervous system. It also improves your focus, memory, and learning ability while simultaneously calming the mind. So that's another herb I want to bring to your attention, and so you can get ahead of it and use it. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
When the sun in the morning creeps over the hill, and it kisses the roses round my windowsill. Then my heart fills with gladness when I hear the trill of the birds in the treetops on Mockingbird Hill. Tra-la-la, tootity-dee-dee, it gives me a...
I was able to see Les Paul at the end of his life. One of our listeners was, I guess, his manager, and invited me to come down to the Empire Hotel where he was performing. And he was in his 90s, I believe, at the time. A remarkable person. I don't care who you speak with, whether it was Paul McCartney, Peter Townsend, everyone who appreciates the guitar would have to say that he was the single most innovative master of the guitar and more innovations for the guitar than any person in history. And I like that, the way he put all that together. Anyhow, later this week, I'll be doing my final part 5 of the series on our deadly nuclear legacy. And that's on the human experimentation. I would have done it on Friday, but after 4 straight days of very intense programming, I'm going to give a little break to it. So we'll come back one day next week and conclude that. Then I'll be doing what I was working on today after I filmed. Went out yesterday, we were filming yesterday in Columbus, and out on the West Coast. Next week it'll be in Wales in England, and all for a new documentary on radiation, trying to get it done very quickly in the next 30 days, beginning to end, so we can educate the public before the Republicans use the disaster in Japan as a way of suggesting that we have a safer nuclear a plant structure here in the United States. Our rules are better. No one's ever been injured. Well, you've heard the people commenting on this. Now you'll know the truth, that everything they tell you is a lie. We want to have a moratorium on all this. Also, I'm working on a very important investigative report that is not complete, but right now looks as if we can tie the thousands of earthquakes in Arkansas to a whole new connection with the Gulf oil spill and hydrofracking. And I'm interviewing a whole group of geologists and other engineers because there's an absolute connection. But I don't want to say anything prematurely. I want to have all the evidence in hand to make an informed argument. I hope to do that within the next 2 weeks, because what we're doing is we're allowing the energy cartels to dig down into these lower strata and cause fracturing. And as you will see, the disasters with the charts I have are just really phenomenal. And I see that we could be facing some major cataclysmic events in the United States. And therefore, if the people do not respond, then they do so at their own risk. But I want a complete and full and scholarly, methodical and scientifically verifiable series of papers put together with the experts before I finally bring this out. Now, others have brought up bits and pieces. No one's put it all together, and that's what I'm trying to do. And I believe that we are probably within 1 to 2 years of seeing a cataclysmic event. And I won't go into what they say. The geologists say, is possible. But there would be no place for about half of all Americans to be able to live that would be safe. And it would disrupt all of our life here. We would literally be thrown into the dark ages for a whole lot of people. But again, don't rely upon any of your government agencies to ever be honest. They're incapable of being honest or forthright. And certainly this administration. This administration is the Clinton administration redox, which was the Reagan administration redox. So it doesn't matter whether you put a Democrat or Republican into office today. They're all acting the same. They're corporatists. So I'll tie in who's behind all this drilling and hydrofracking and oil and gas and nuclear. And that also will be coming. Just giving a little preview of some of the things I have coming up your way. Now, before we go to Dr. Howard Robbins, which we're going to in a moment, I want to share a few small pieces of information, and then I'll open up our phone lines. This is from Robert Benson and Miller McCune.com. It says, "You've got to go back to the Scopes monkey trial of 1925 for a precedent to the anti-science mania that is currently sweeping the GOP. Then the issue was teaching Darwin's work on evolution in the schools. Today the issue is global warming. Then as now, large numbers of politicians tapped into the stratum of popular culture that simply rejects science as the basis for public or personal decisions. The chief prosecutor of high school teacher John Scopes, William Jennings Bryan, gloated that literal interpretation of the Bible trumps scientific knowledge. This resonated with large masses of ordinary folk. The ones H.L. Mencken in the liberal press were calling yokels or morons." By the way, just as an aside, I've looked very carefully at that entire trial, and I would have approached it differently. I would have gone after literal interpretations, and I would have taken individuals who were popular at the time, and who had businesses that opened on the Sabbath, who had any children that had any difficulty with their parents, and suggested if you believe that every word of the Bible is the word of God, then you have a moral responsibility, unless you're a complete hypocrite, to have yourself stoned to death for opening any business or supporting any business. So if you drive into a filling station on Sunday, then the person owns the station and you pulling into it, both are guilty in the eyes of God. If your child ever says anything negative to you, then they are guilty. Why haven't you then committed yourself to honoring the word of God? But, of course, I wasn't the one in the Scopes monkey trial, because I wouldn't back off. I'd have found over 1,800 separate verbatim references to show you that the God they're believing in is one very racist, misogynist, hate-filled, completely demented God, if you interpret every word of the Bible literally. But that's part of their hypocrisy. In any case, back to the issue. Today, what we have is we have people like Scopes. By the way, Scopes was found guilty of violating the Tennessee law that prohibited teaching evolution, and his conviction was later overturned on a technicality, galvanized the anti-evolution movement for decades. Politicians came pouring in. Scores of resolutions were introduced in state legislatures and school boards all over the country, setting back the teaching of evolution for decades until logic and reason and scientific method gradually reasserted themselves in our culture. Well, today Republicans are falling over themselves in a rush to ridicule the science that shows our use of fossil fuels is producing greenhouse gases that are warming the planet to disastrous levels. These findings were confirmed even by the Bush administration before it left office, as well as by the U.S. National Academy of Sciences and every other significant scientific academy around the world. All acknowledge that the globe is getting warmer, and humans and our industrial revolution over the last 200 years is responsible. All they have to do is look at the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. But anti-scientists are undaunted by facts. More than half of the incoming Republican caucus denies the validity of climate change science. 74% of Republicans in the U.S. Senate now take a stance, as do 53% of GOP in the House. Let me just give you a sample of this. Quote, "I personally believe that the solar flares are more responsible for climate cycles than anything that humans can do." That's Jim Sessenbrenner from Wisconsin, Republican. "Nobody really knows the cause." And we do know the cause. That's Representative Duncan Hunter of California. There was a report a couple weeks ago that, in fact, if it was the warmest year in the last decade, I think was the numbers that came out. I don't accept that. Fred Upton, Michigan. You don't accept it? What, you don't accept that it was the hottest? Well, that's a matter of record. Quote, "The greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American public," Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma. Okay. Republican John Shimkus of Illinois says we need not worry about the planet being destroyed because, citing chapter 8, verse 22 of the book of Genesis, God promised Noah it wouldn't happen again after the great flood. I see. Got a question for you, Representative Shimkus. Where exactly did Noah put the Tyrannosaurus Rex? Next to the elephant, the deer, and how did they feed him? And you know that giant, because he took two of everything, what about the giant shark that was 63 feet long? Did the shark suddenly no longer have to breathe water through its gills to create air, or was it a different type of shark? Wow. Okay. And there we have Senator John McCain. Isn't it amazing that we actually allow pro-magnum species to still exist in the Senate? He should be in the Museum of Natural History under our ancestors before they stood upright. That's John McCain. And he co-authored a good global warming bill when running for president in 2008, but he did a 180-degree turnabout when running for re-election in Arizona Senate 2 years later, saying, quote, there's great questions about it that needs to be resolved. No, the only thing that needs to be resolved is, how does anybody with your brain actually think? Well, the Tea Party and its allies has made it unacceptable to the GOP base to be anywhere except pandering to the anti-science crowd. None of this would have surprised historian Richard Hallstatter, who won a Pulitzer Prize for anti-intellectualism in American life. That was in 1964. It's only been mastered further to this date. Starting with the colonies, Hallstatter shows how the vast underlying stratum of anti-elite, anti-reason, anti-science Americans has frequently erupted into political and cultural action. These are folks who never heard of the Enlightenment of the 18th century and do not experience a lot of reason, logic, or empirical method in their daily lives. They live by, well, their own personal relationships and superstition. They've always been with us, and there's an awful lot of them. Their outburst in today's anti-science global warming mania would be just the latest chapter. You might think that the revolution of internet blogging networking technology would work to spread sound scientific knowledge more broadly, but you would be wrong. The new technology spreads a cacophony of voices in which the pre-Enlightenment folks are not only equal, but more numerous and dominant than the voices of reason. Journalist Charles Pierce, not long ago, wrote an essay on Idiot America, followed by a book of that name in which he argued that the rise of Idiot America today represents for profit mainly, but also, and more cynically, for political advantage and in the pursuit of power, the breakdown of a consensus that the pursuit of knowledge is a good. It also represents the ascendancy of the notion that the people whom we should trust the least are the people who best know what they're talking about. In the new media age, everybody is a historian, or a preacher, or a scientist, or a sage. And if everyone is an expert, then nobody is. And the worst thing that you can be in a society where everybody's an expert, well, is an actual expert. Moreover, the new technology is not working alone. You have the likes of oil interests like the Koch brothers and ExxonMobil funding a whole group of anti-science spokesmen and think tanks and lobbyists. They put their money into sowing doubt about the scientific consensus, as many of these same people did on tobacco, ozone, acid rain, playing on the fact that the way science works is to set up repeated challenges of the evidence by peers, but ignoring that scientific consensus do indeed exist. Otherwise, we would not have made the progress we did in tobacco, ozone, and acid rain. Sheltered by the technological cacophony and the big money available, politicians feel unashamed to stand in front of the National Academy of Sciences and virtually every client scientist in the world and utter irrational things like God promised Noah, or solar flares, or nobody really knows, or not man-made, or a hoax. The denier's goal is to create the perception that fundamental aspects of climate change are controversial. All their claims, all the studies cited, and all the evidence they have presented has been thoroughly reviewed by climate scientists. There is no scientific basis for contesting the Academy's findings. What do I think? I think we are in Tennessee in 1925 in the grip of the anti-scientist, anti-intellectual, anti-reason, and surrounded by muck-up politicians. We will lose a generation in dealing with greenhouse gases. Yet the science says we have only a few years. And I say we have under five. After all, to my knowledge, I could be wrong, but I've been asking and speaking. I'm the only person in the world right now doing the most comprehensive documentary ever done on the 12 tipping points. I've yet to find any human being that I've interviewed who could name all 12 tipping points. I also believe that we will be hit by at least four cataclysmic events in the next 5 years. I believe that any one of these is capable of causing us over $1 trillion in damage. Remember well, was it not 2 weeks ago that when they said that the damage in Japan would cost $3 billion, I said it'll cost us closer to $500 billion. Not that they won't rebuild, they will. They're an extraordinarily brilliant and industrious group, and they easily have the money. They have $800 billion in T-bills. They could cash in those T-bills and have every nickel they need to completely rebuild, and actually rebuild in a way that would give them strength against the next 9-scale earthquake or the next 40-foot tsunami and the next failed effort at hiding a completely failed nuclear system as far as its safety, which we're all finding out now. And one other thing. I've had so many scientists and physicians who've asked me in the last year, as this show has reached more and more people, why don't you go out there and write this study and prove that? And I say, I have no desire to prove anything to your ilk. I have no interest in the world of speaking with any more scientists or physicians. I've found your entire breed corrupt, immoral, anti-intellectual, and anti-scientific. Let me give you an example. We have absolute, irrefutable proof that the HIV virus by itself cannot cause 30 different conditions, and that a massive, fraudulent scientific establishment has milked the lies, deceptions, and fears in small little rat packs like ACT UP and other groups of completely discredited minds have set upon anyone to try to destroy their reputation if they challenged any aspect of the HIV equals AIDS equals death and you only need the drug and the antibody test to survive. This is a hypothesis that is now challenged by 3,000 scientists, including multiple professors of virology and immunology and Nobel Prize winners. When was the last time the American media or the scientific community listened to their argument? Never. When a letter was written showing that the entire Gallo hypothesis was discredited by the original actual lab notes from his lab director that actually wrote up the study, he could not find an HIV virus. Yet that was scribbled out by Gallo, and that original paper that no one ever thought would be seen was discovered and published by Janine Roberts, the great 40-year BBC and Channel 4 award-winning journalist in England who brought us Blood Diamonds and Rape in the Congo and the taking of the Aborigines from their families into schools and to deculturize them. She is quite simply peerless. And yet not a single word about this. Nor do you have any word about the alternative cancer therapies that have been shown by peer review of the peers in the field, at least 100 separate physicians working in alternative cancer work, that these work. Why? Because in our world, you cannot have two realities sharing the same space with equal intensity. So as long as you're willing to subordinate your ideas, your philosophy, your beliefs to the dominant position of power, then you can be tolerated or even accepted, providing that you are not separate. So if you came up with a new chemotherapy that helped with some form of cancer and survival, you can be accepted, in all likelihood, bought up by one of the other existing chemotherapy companies. But if you came up and suggested that your work showed that you could live a healthier, longer life with greater survival without that chemotherapy and tried a different natural protocol, you would be attacked and destroyed. There is no room for any democracy, open discussion, and open dialogue. There is no honest intellectual discourse or reason at all anywhere in medicine or science, or for that matter, education. We are dumbing down our students because of a radicalized curriculum, guarded over by a corrupt union, indifferent teachers, and the stupidest parents on the planet, who are absolutely tyrannical, unless it's a charter school where you have the most enlightened individuals who are doing the best work to try to at least allow the students, the teachers, the parents a chance to work without being encumbered by constant oversight and the pathology of power interfering the process. That's why I'm able to help charter schools change their health and why they're changing curriculums. And they're doing a phenomenal job. And yet it's a threat to the mainstream. Everywhere you look, anything that does the right job, that tells the honest story, will be attacked. So continue believing that we are this great intellectual centerpiece of the new Renaissance, and I'll show you 100 reasons why that's just delusional. I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts. Your chance to share yours. That's our issue. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I don't care what you talk about today. I'll show you that it is all nonsense. Talking about saving the Libyan people by bombing everyone and supporting the attackers, then why not save the Syrian population? Bomb Syria. Saudi Arabia that is supporting Bahrain. Bomb in Bahrain. And bomb all those tanks and soldiers going from Saudi Arabia in there. The hypocrisy is palpable. And the talking heads are moronic. And it's an insult to any honest, progressive mind to listen to these people, and yet you never hear a progressive mind. And please don't tell me Alan Colmes and Juan Williams are progressive. Not in my book. I'm Gary Noll. 888-874-4888 is our number. We're going to come back with Howard Robbins, then your calls. The forum is yours. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to go to Howard Robbins in a moment, but let's say hello to a few of you. I see the lines are just all lit up. Marion from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Yes. I have a question in reference to treatment for breast cancer.
Yes.
Stage 2A.
Yeah, go ahead and give your question. We're having a poor technical hookup here.
Okay. Yes, in reference to stage 2A, I wanted to find out alternative treatments to breast cancer.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to hang up. I'll answer over the air, all right?
Excuse me?
Hang up. I'll answer over the air.
Okay.
All right, first and foremost, Miriam, understand that all cancers, whether leukemias, melanomas, lymphomas, sarcomas, glioblastomas, they are all initiated by defects within the DNA. DNA in the blood, lymphatic system, the bone marrow, in the individual cells. What causes defects? More often than not, the cell does not have the protection of anti-inflammatory antioxidants. Antioxidants taken once in the morning are not enough because you're producing hundreds of billions of free radicals constantly. So you need to have, and if you have heavy metals in your body, mercury, lead, cadmium, then arsenic, you're going to have far more free radicals produced. So you need antioxidants throughout the day, hence juicing throughout the day, taking your antioxidant supplements like vitamin C and quercetin and throughout the day, vitamin E, alpha-lipoic acid, bioflavonoids, L-cysteine, methionine. All of these are good because they trap the free radicals. So the more free radicals you trap, the less inflammation. But then what causes that inflammation? Well, normal living will cause inflammation, but because it creates free radicals, which can lead to inflammation. But the moment you're eating foods like hamburgers, hot dogs, french fries, bagels, pizzas, donuts, coffee, soft drinks, artificial sweeteners, alcohol, you have just taken that toxic reaction to the body to a whole new level, and that's where you end up with trouble. So you've got to stop everything that is acidic and pro-inflammatory and cool the body down with anti-inflammatory and highly alkalizing juices, salads, whole grains, root vegetables, all natural alkalizing and good for you. Then find yourself a three-stage program. Stage one, detoxify the body. Stage two, stimulate the immune system. Stage three, get yourself into the hands of a complementary physician who can show you actual results by putting you directly in touch with patients who've had stage two, three, or four breast cancer that have been reversed and are alive and well with no cancer after 5 years. That way you can have some confidence that the person that you're seeing has had success, and the more success the better, because then you'll know that there's a roadmap they've used before you. And any legitimate physician would have no trouble putting you in touch with those people. Now, if you watched the 3.5-hour, almost 4.5-hour documentary, Preventing and Reversing Cancer Naturally, that will give you who the best people are I have found and the best overall protocols. All the best to you. Dawn, you're on. Dawn from Maryland.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I'm taking more thyroid right now for my hypothyroidism, about 45 milligrams a day. But I'm interested in finding out from you whether you think potassium iodide with iodine also helps to improve its effectiveness. And also with all this news about potassium iodide being used, you know, for troops, etc., what do you think about us taking it in the U.S. based on a disaster in Japan?
Well, first, there are three separate issues. One, I believe we're going to be hit with some very serious amounts of radiation in the United States, and that will impact mostly and most severely initially women who are pregnant because of its impact upon the developing fetus. I also believe that we have made the mistake of looking only at the thyroid gland and thinking as long as we take these pills, we're protected. We are not. I want you to go to my Progressive Radio Network archive, look at Wednesday a week ago and Friday a week ago's programs. I did a half hour on protecting your body from radiation, full body protection, half hour on two separate days, a full hour. Listen to a half hour on Wednesday, half hour Friday, not last Wednesday and Friday, the Wednesday and Friday before then, okay? And that will give you the full understanding. Otherwise, no, you don't want to be dosing yourself up with potassium iodide, because if you take too much, you can cause problems or side effects. And from a good diet, you're getting your potassium iodine. And, okay, let's say hello to Dr. Howard Robbins. Hi, Howard. Do we have...
Hi,
Howard.
Good to be here again.
Howard, we have a lot of people in this audience who would like to know about how to keep their feet and leg healthy. And I'd like to hear some of the issues that I've had, because these were on the email at the station when I came in downstairs to do the show a little while ago. People have fungus under the nails. And by the way, anyone who would like to call now and exclusively ask questions of Dr. Robbins about your foot and leg care, those lines are now open. 888-874-4888. No other questions, no other issues, just foot and leg care for Dr. Howard Robbins, who is, by the way, a board-certified podiatrist, and for over 35 years has been a podiatrist. He has been a professor of podiatry and is a holistic podiatrist, along with the other things he does in helping people with ozone. 888-874-4888. But let's address two questions right up. First, fungus under the nails, very common.
Okay. You know, when we first wrote our book, How to Keep Your Feet and Legs Healthy for a Lifetime, back around 1990, the answer to that question was very simple, and since then, the information we have has advanced so much, there's much more to say about it. First of all, it's very clear that a person who has fungus under the toenails has a much deeper immune issue, and generally it's due to candidiasis in the intestinal system. Just about everybody has taken an oral antibiotic in their lifetime, even once, killing off all the good bacteria in their intestine and allowing yeast to overgrow. And even occasionally you get a person who said, oh, I never took an antibiotic. But if you ask them, did you ever eat red meat or chicken that wasn't organic? And they go, yeah, well, then they took antibiotics as well. And I believe at this point in time that everybody that has fungal toenails has fungus in their intestinal system that has to be addressed. Otherwise, it's going to come back again. Now, how do you treat it under the nails? Back then, there was an herbal salve that we wrote in the book that, and soap that they could make. Today, we have many other choices. First, we can give injections of ozone right into the growth portion of where the nail comes from. It's actually quite painless. It stings just for a second, if anything at all. And it's a very, very quick, using an extremely fine needle, almost like an acupuncture needle. And it's just split second. Shooting just a drop in there of ozone, and it destroys the fungus where it's actually growing from, which is in at the base of the nail. When you destroy it in that area where it's beginning to grow from, you get rid of it within usually about 3 months. Now, you got to do an injection a week for that, sometimes two, to get rid of it, but we've had nothing but great success that way. Way to treat it is to get ozonated olive oil, which you can buy online. You get ozonated organic extra virgin olive oil or safflower oil, and you put it all over the nail, under the nail, and at the base of the nail, sometime, and then wrap it up with a little saran wrap, you know, plastic wrap overnight, and you do this every night. Now, sometimes the nail will fall off, particularly if it's horribly fungus, which you don't want anyway. Let's get rid of it. It comes off very safely and easily, believe it or not. It just sort of loosens, softens, and comes off. Then you keep putting the salve on each day when the nail is gone, and eventually you have a new nail growing out, and it often is just completely healthy again, and that's a safe, easy way to treat it also. Then there's a company that came out with a chemical. We actually have it. It's a rather safe chemical, believe it or not, even though it's a traditional medicine, that you can paint on the nail, and they absolutely guarantee that it'll work or they'll give you all your money back. And it's not too expensive either, and you have to buy it from doctors. One day they'll probably make it over the counter and cost 10 times the amount they want doctors to sell it for. And,
okay, Howard, we've got very little time, so I got to ask you to do the short answers, all right?
Okay, well, those are the three ways. That's a big question.
Howard,
you know, right.
Howard,
thousands of people with the problem.
Howard?
Yes?
I know it's hard for you. I need the short answers real quick. John from New Jersey. John, you're on. Speak up, John, please.
Hi, John. What's your question?
Got rid of a wart using natural apple cider vinegar, and everything's gone. The only thing is I'm trying to heal the little hole that's left over faster. So any recommendations?
Well, that's another thing that the ozonated olive oil is really good for. But you can use vitamin E as well. Just take a capsule of vitamin E, you know, all natural vitamin E, pop it open with a round toothpick, rub a little bit of the oil on each day, cover it with a Band-Aid if you have to, and that should help the tissue around there get healthy and well fast.
There is a better form of vitamin E. It's upwards of 44,000 units. And you buy it in a little jar, and you take pour a little bit around and massage it in. That's very, very high level of vitamin E. I would go with a high level. Let's say hello to Keith from New York. Hi, Keith.
I would like to know about bunions. I have like bunion growing like on the side of on my right leg where the pinky is.
Okay. That's called what we call Taylor's bunions when they're on the outside of the foot, not the inside of the foot by the big toe. So when it's by the little toe, they call them Taylor's bunions. This is caused actually by an inherited imbalance in the structure of your feet from a parent or a grandparent. And what we do for that, to prevent surgery, and that's the key thing, is to prevent surgery, what you want to do is have proper biomechanical orthotic devices made. So you come in the office, we examine your foot structure, we cast it, holding it in an ideal position for it to begin moving from, and we make you these devices that are very comfortable, worn in athletic shoes as well as in dress shoes, to control the movement of your foot, and that stops it in its tracks from getting any larger. You just wear these things all the time in shoes, and usually gets rid of any pain that's associated with it. If you don't use orthotics, you're definitely going to wind up having pain eventually and very likely needing foot surgery to fix it. The key is to prevent the surgery, and that's how we can do it.
Howard, what do you do when it's mainly in women because the high heels and very tight shoes they wear, but where the big toe turns in and you get this strange in effect, and sometimes it actually can go over the next toe over.
Yes, that's overlapping when that happens. That's pretty severe. That's the bunion on the other side. And it's actually caused by the same problem, that mechanical imbalance. The tight shoes that women wear just make it happen a lot faster in life. And by controlling the abnormal mechanics of the foot, we can usually prevent it from getting worse. Once it's already that way, you can't really put it back to normal again without surgery. But trust me when I say, the surgical axiom holds, surgery begets surgery, and though I did hundreds of bunion surgeries when I used to teach it, it's not the way to go because they wind up breaking down later on in life and causing more trouble.
Okay, Nick from Texas. Hi, Nick.
Hi. I got a knee that slid on the ice and fell and broke a tibia and fibula, right where it meets the foot. And they did surgery to align the bones and put a cast on her. Now they've taken off the cast, and I was wondering if there was something she could do to maybe hasten the healing process.
Well, there's a number of things. First of all, you need chiropractic adjustment of your upper body because in almost every case like this, your upper body is going to be out of alignment. So you need to see a good chiropractor and make certain that you get a quality adjustment. The second thing is you need stretching exercises almost always for the rear leg muscles. If any of your rear leg muscles or the muscles in front of your leg are the thigh and the lower leg are atrophied, then you need some strengthening exercises to do for that too. That's very important. If you're stuck with any residual pain after the surgery in the knee itself, then you want to look to prolotherapy. So you have to look for an alternative doctor that does a special type of injection called prolotherapy, where they inject an inert substance, something that causes a slight irritation to the tissue, and thus a healing response takes place. They're very safe to do. In fact, they even use ozone for that. It's called prolozone, and there are doctors that use that in different places in the country.
Okay.
And this can get rid of the pain.
All right. We also have Dr. Martin Feldman. Marty, we're not going to have time to go into macular degeneration, but you also have a way of helping people strengthen bones that would help prevent osteoporosis, but also help bones heal. What would that be?
First off, there's a miracle mineral called strontium. Strontium is citrate, is excellent, and it's available about 200 milligrams per tablet. You need two tablets, but it's a little complicated because it competes with calcium, so you must take that usually an hour away from calcium. And many people take it at bedtime because they will take many of their nutrients at dinner time or after, and then it is time and bedtime they take their strontium. That would be number one. Boron, very, very helpful for the bone, very, very important. Calcium in many, many forms. You might need a high dose. Calcium citrate is a very absorbable type of calcium. It's friendly on the body. You can take doses up to 1,000 a day for openers. Some people need even higher. Magnesium, very important for the bones as well, and magnesium citrate is an excellent type of magnesium. Many, many people have magnesium deficiency, and they tend to have their magnesium dose too low for helping the bone, whereby commonly nutrients have calcium, let's say 1,000, and magnesium 500, 2-to-1 ratio. But often, if you have a bone problem of any type, you want to usually have your magnesium probably even equal to your calcium or sometimes even greater. And the key to everything is absorption, because you can do a lot better if your digestion is tuned up carefully, such that your stomach acid is proper and especially pancreatic enzymes are proper, to absorb your nutrients from food to help the bones to be healthy without supplements. And this is workable in terms of finding an alternative doctor who can test stomach acid and the pancreatic enzymes in an efficient manner. And even as a therapeutic trial, if you have any digestive problems of any symptoms, you can try a over-the-counter, vegetarian, very safe, inexpensive therapeutic trial of pancreatic enzymes to see if it helps your digestion symptoms. It'll help to absorb your food better, it'll help to absorb everything, and it'll help your bones a great deal. So there's a few things you have to do, but it's very, very simple, very, very effective, and it's unfortunately not part of orthodox medicine as we speak, but we should move it toward that direction.
Thank you. And just a few other things. Bromelain, vitamin C, quercetin, all important with bone health, and also boron, manganese, and silica to enhance bone healing when there's been a bone fracture or break. Dr. Martin Feldman will be back later this week to talk about macular degeneration. He's in New York at 212-744-4413. And Dr. Howard Robbins, any questions about foot and leg care? Howard, give us your number, please.
My number is 212-581-0101.
Okay, again?
212-581-0101.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Gary.
Okay. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program.